Everybody likes guns, they just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 149 of New Shooter Canada. Tonight, it's just me, Benny, and Michael tonight. So, Benny, what'd you do with guns this week?
I borrowed a Swager, so that's good. And I'm waiting for some mags to clear customs.
Cool.
You ordered mags from the U.S.?
Nope, from Israel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I paid, worked out to be like 48, I want to say like 48 bucks or something. Let's say 50, around nice round number, around 50 bucks Canadian, and I got two mags. So if I bought two mags here, I would be paying twice that.
Yeah.
Almost.
So this company in Israel, did they pre-pin the mags to 10 for you as well?
So I'm not sure. They, on their website, this is, I bought this from Zahal.org, which you can use my affiliate link on BennyLewis.ca, by the way. They have in their store listed as 16 round and 10 round. So they had the option of the blued or the stainless. Stainless were, I want to say, at least $10 more US. So I went with the blued, because that's what I already have anyways. And we'll see what they're like when they get there. But they are Jericho mags. Like, they're not CZ mags or Tanfolio mags that I've repurposed. They are aftermarket, so they're not made by IWI. They're made by Elander, but they are made for the Jericho. Yeah, they are made for the Jericho. They're not CZ mags or Tanfolio mags. So, yeah.
That's good. You have a hard time finding those mags here?
I have a hard time finding cheap mags here.
Okay.
I could go out, like, someone was offering, they actually had Baby Eagle mags, and they were 48 bucks Canadian.
Each.
Yeah. So I was like, no, thank you. Or thanks for letting me know, and I'm going to order them online.
Well, I'm going to make you feel a little bit better. Is that all you did in guns this week, Benny?
Yeah, I didn't do a lot. Okay. I just swaged a little.
Well, I went to SFRC, and I picked up a couple mags for Sarah, some M&P mags. And while browsing around, I found out that they had some PPQ mags. So you were upset about $50 a mag. I was paying $70 a mag.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch. So ouch. I bought Sarah four mags, and I bought myself two, and it cost the same amount.
Oh, wow.
So, well, I bought just enough so I don't have to pop my mag out when I'm doing my load and make ready to put the bonus round in there. But outside of that, I mean, I'm not going to buy any more.
So, as usual, I always forget to put something in. I did something else I did in guns this week is I went with my dad to Sale to get his Nikon, I think it was the Pro Staff, I forget which one, installed on his Remington, I want to say 597, whatever the Remington's semi-auto 22 is.
Yeah, it's a 597.
And while I was up there, I was just looking at their magazines, and I noticed that they had the Marlin 795 magazine for like 30 bucks, and I'm thinking to myself, it's just, you know, stamped sheet metal. Like, why does it cost 30 bucks? But, yeah.
Yeah, that's the reality of it. Especially if you buy, like, these, from what I understood, it's because these are Walter mags, and Walter mags are just more expensive. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because of the name, right? I mean, you buy a Ferrari, everything costs more, even though how it's the same parts.
Yeah, I feel like Heckler and Koch is the same way. You'll spend like almost two grand on one of their guns, and then you'll spend almost as much in mags.
Yeah,
if you're running for IPSC or something. So.
Oh yeah, and I only grabbed enough. I grabbed enough mags for IDPA plus one spare. So I mean, if I decide to do IPSC, I'd need even more.
How many do you need for IDPA? Three.
The minimum is three mags. I like to have five, because when you go up and you do your load and make ready, so you. The easiest way to do it is have an extra mag with one round in it. So you put that mag in your gun, rack the slide, drop the mag, and you can check, yep, it's empty. put that one in your pocket, and then you pull out a 10-round mag, put it in. Now you have 11 in your gun.
Yeah, I saw someone do that, but forget that crucial step of putting a second magazine in.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people forget to do that. I've seen people who put that Barney mag, that's what you call that mag with one round, or the mag that you're just going to rack one round into it. I've seen people who do that, rack it, and then they forget what they're doing, and they just put that gun back and, you know, take one shot, and the gun locks back, and,
Oops.
Yeah. Hopefully that's not a high round count stage, because you just lost 10 rounds.
Yeah.
So, Thomas, what did you get up to?
I went shooting Monday, but before when I forgot to mention that I was having firing pin problems last Sunday with my X-Trim. The X-Trim elevation screw was interfering with the firing pin spring, so I was getting light single-action primer strikes when I dialed up or down the sights with some new test ammo. I knew I had a problem, but it disappeared when I adjusted the sights. When I changed ammo, it came back again, so I had to get the problem resolved. Because Dave messaged me and asked me if I could bring my X-Trim to the open house as a demo gun, so I couldn't bring a gun that wasn't running properly. So after last Sunday's shoot, I pulled a mic and I took a Dremel tool and I shortened the screw twice on my elevation screw. It worked great. We put 800 rounds through the gun and it never failed once. But I did notice that my slide kept closing down when I put the gun hit the bench. But later on that, so I went to the Odell dealer day and it was great. I met lots of new people there from my local gun shops, ran into some old friends. Actually, Drew and his girlfriend for William's Arms were there. There were several signups to win free guns, trigger groups, optics from Phil and Pam Odell. And we gave away two P40 pistols, but I was ineligible to enter since I was actually working the thing, so figures. But lots
could
of new guns.
Put my name down.
You had to be there.
Oh.
You could.
No, I'm not a dealer.
Oh, he was here. He just had to take off early. I'll take it and give it to him later.
Well, there was a couple of outfitters.
What dealer is he working for that?
There was a couple of wildlife outfitters that actually he sells their products. And they actually came there and they helped and set up. So he had a lot of volunteers for the event too.
That's good.
Okay.
So as I said, I was ineligible, so I couldn't win. So there's lots of gear coming up in the next couple of shows. It was great to see Dean and Tracy Carr from Select Shooting Supplies again. And actually, well, the guys and Kyla went down the other end of the range. They did a video with the Daria shotguns, I think. Tracy came back and she played with some of her smaller 9mm pistols. And, you know, she was hitting 7 to 8 out of 10, not really good. And it wasn't comfortable, so I switched the back strap and I put the smaller strap on her. She was just nailing those things. She shoots really well. Better than Dean, actually. He put a few rounds and he was missing the steel off him. Not Tracy, she never missed. If she doesn't compete, then she should, because she's a really good shot. And guess who won one of her pistols? She won one of the P-40s too, so she walks away with the Grand Power pistol anyway. So thanks for inviting back Grand Power back for the second time. Phil, Grand Power, we're the only non-Odell brand present there. And it was nice to be invited back again. I guess Dave and Phil are friends. He was at the event last year. Everything else is Odell. Nothing else from any other distributor. And then he just has Dave there from Grand Power, which is kind of cool. And it was actually really nice to meet Phil and Pam and their family. Really good people. They have three or four young, really young teenage girls. So poor Phil, he's got his hands full there. I got to meet Kayla Worth, our sponsored shooter. Yes, she is very cute. And she knows her stuff too. Great RO, top shooter. She was a lot of fun to work with. And even with the cold, she was suffering. And that girl sure works hard. And afterwards, we went back to the pub. Everybody had something to eat. Except me, I had two coffees, which was a bad move because I had about four or five bottles of water. So I drank those two coffees and I probably went to the washroom 10 times at the restaurant. But
I was thinking more like the issue of if you're, you know, usually you go to the pub in the afternoon, which means you're going to be up all night if you drink two coffees.
Well, he put on a really big lunch spread. It was all subs and all the dressings and
all the
toppings.
Oh, okay, this was at lunchtime.
Well, this was a dinner. So he put on such, I don't usually eat a big lunch, but I ate a really big lunch there. So come dinner time, I wasn't full. And I should have eaten something because, thank you, Phil. He picked up the tab for everybody. So I should have got something to eat. But it was great. I don't think I got out of there till maybe 6:30. I probably hit maybe 5:30 and then drove straight to Benny's place. He lent me his rotary tumbler. It was funny because when I put the picture on Facebook, Krosno especially was teasing me that that's too small because it's only 3 pounds each canister. But Benny figured it out. Pound of water, pound of media, and pound of brass. And actually, when you run the two of them, it makes the same amount of brass as that when I reload, I have one of those little shelf brackets that when you get your those 12 gun safes. You get those little brackets that mount on the side, little bins, plastic bins.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, just this little shot bin. So it fills it right to the top when I'm done. So it actually makes just as much brass that I would normally reload anyway. And it saved me a couple hours, so.
Great.
Terry hated those little tiny pins getting on the counter. And you can't do it over a metal sink. It's not a good idea. So the second batch... the second batch you did downstairs in the basement where I've got a plastic sink and stopper.
So did you deprime them before you tumbled them?
Yep, I did everything. I think I put them in, Benny said, 3 hours, and they came out beautifully.
Yep, you're happy with how the primer pockets turned out?
Yeah, very happy.
That's good.
Well, so I had all these brass, and I discovered that I had no small pistol primers.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, first world problems.
Yeah,
it was really bad third world problems.
So when I got home, I had to do another complete field strip of the AK-22 because I had another problem. There's underneath the release, there's a tiny spring that sits in the frame, and there's a little grease in there in that little channel that holds the spring in place. So you don't want to lose the spring, right, Mike? But I still pulled a Mike, and I sort of stretched it when I should have cut the spring. I actually made it worse. So I was thinking downward pressure when the spring needed upward pressure. So I had to take it apart again, cut the spring. It works great now. I also reduced the firing pin spring one link. So I really like this gun. The trigger so sweet from the factory, and I'm not having any issues now with the light primer strike. So I just like the way on the first shot it rolls, and then on the reset, it's just crisps let off. Really nice little trigger. And what else? So I say I had no small pistol primers, but I had large pistol primers. So I figured, okay, well, I wanted to download some 44s for that lever action of mine. So I contacted Mike from the Reloading Podcast and asked him if he knew good powder for 44 Magnum, because I wasn't getting, I had Winchester listed one load for the 231, and it was 11 grain maximum, and that was it. There was no other loadings. And I got terrible accuracy with it. So when I contacted Mike, he didn't know, so he contacted Jim, and Jim just suggested Unique. He said I could run any 44 special through any 44 Magnum with Unique powder. So that's what I'm going to try. So I got to go buy some powder and some primers. So guns in the news. Mike, what's the first story in the news tonight?
First story. Peel Regional Police Officer Guilty of Storing Guns Unsafely by Louis Rosella. This is from the Mississauga News and has been edited down. Constable Donald Malotte, a Peel Regional Police Officer, has been demoted after pleading guilty to misconduct and being convicted criminally of unsafe storing several guns, including one, quote-unquote, with the ammunition readily available, with his young children living in his home. Constable Donald Malotte, an 8-year member of the Force and Road Safety Services Officer, pleaded guilty to 3 counts of discreditable conduct at his Police Services Act hearing and received a reduction in rank from first class constable to second class constable for 3 months, hearing officer Superintendent Colleen Fawcett ruled. Malotte is a licensed firearm owner and an avid hunter who owns several firearms. He was charged on March 20, 2016 by the OPP with 6 counts of unsafe storage of a firearm after officers responded to his home in the town of Mono in response to a 911 call about a quote-unquote domestic dispute between Malotte and his wife. While officers were at the home, they were told there was a handgun stored in the kitchen drawer and that it was not stored securely. Officers were led to the kitchen where a .22 caliber handgun was located, quote-unquote, with ammunition readily available, the Police Services Act hearing heard. Police then found a number of guns within the residence, many of which Malotte advised police of and indicated their location. In addition to the unsecured handgun in the kitchen drawer, a bolt-action Remington 300 caliber rifle was found in an unlocked bedroom closet, which was leaning against the wall in the back corner with no trigger lock. There were additional guns stored within the vicinity of a locked gun vault in the basement of the residence that were not secured, including a 12-gauge shotgun leaning against the wall, quote-unquote, that was not trigger locked or secured. Malotte pleaded guilty to 3 counts of breach of firearms regulations in relation to the 3 unsecured guns and was handed a conditional sentence plus 12 months probation in Orangeville Court. Peel prosecutor Inspector Dave Andrews said keeping several guns in an accessible and unsecure manner in a home with young children, quote unquote, is extremely serious and dangerous conduct. Fawcett said Malott's actions were inappropriate, dangerous, and he showed extremely poor judgment. Constable Malott was found to have numerous unsecured weapons in his residence, which were easily accessible to his family, specifically young children and visitors to the residence. It is further aggravating that these weapons were located near ammunition, Fawcett said in her ruling. As a police officer and as an experienced hunter, Constable Malott was well aware of the importance of gun safety. His actions demonstrated a disregard for the laws pertaining to safe gun storage. Constable Malott holds a position of trust to the public and as a police officer, which is in effect at all times, whether on duty or off duty. As a police officer, Malott would be well aware of the number of burglaries that result in unsecured firearms being stolen, said Fawcett. It is a serious matter when a police officer is criminally involved in such an offense, she said. The fact that a police officer had such a blatant disregard for gun safety laws would no doubt bring discredit to the police service in the eyes of the general public. So if this guy is such a terrible example of police officers, why has he got demoted for 3 months? If he's such a terrible example, shouldn't he, I don't know, no longer be an example of a police officer?
Well, they also said he got one unsafe storage.
Oh, I thought I read three.
Well, three reprimands, and he actually was criminally charged with one unsafe storage. In the very beginning, it says the three reprimands and criminal court for unsafe storage. They didn't play up the criminal court, but he did get one. But if it was you or I, first of all, getting called to a domestic dispute, and they pulled up with the firearms that we owned, we would have the SWAT.
SWAT is American, but the Canadian version of it, yeah.
SRU. The tag team. Yeah, the tag team show up and pay me a visit.
Yeah. Well, that, and here's a question. If anyone else was, you know, guilty of this, then you would get a firearm prohibition on you. Like, guaranteed. Like, right off the bat, without even, like, you know, whether or not you were, you know, went to jail or not, you're getting a firearm prohibition right there.
Oh, yeah. So well,
how is this guy going to be able to do his job and, I'd say, be around? Not that being around a firearm makes you do bad things. But how can his employment involve a firearm when he is prohibited, or should be, I should say, prohibited from having a firearm?
He's a criminal. Why is he a police officer to begin with? He's been convicted of a criminal offense.
Another great question.
Police to begin with.
That's another great point.
They arrested my friend last summer for domestic assault against his wife. They came in. They arrested him. They took all the guns off the property. He has a prohibition order. He's prohibited from owning firearms. They're all gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because he got charged, you know, and he wasn't even convicted. He's not even convicted at that point. As soon as you get charged, they're gone instantly. Everything goes and you get charged. And not just unsafe storage. They throw the book at you.
Yeah.
Yep. Second class citizens.
Yeah.
Well, once again, right? He's a cop, so his buddies are all like, you know, we'll just look the other way about this and about that. And, you know.
I wonder if he was, if the domestic dispute was called because he was in a roid rage. I remember that being a thing a couple years back.
With cops?
Yeah. I was actually in Israel at the time and I heard about this.
You know, it's not a... They don't have an easy job, so I never...
No, but when you have a... If you're taking medication to bulk you up so, you know, you can have a safer time at work, but if the side effects are what they call roid rage, where you go into steroid rage,
yeah,
that was the issue. I think that's a bit of a problem, particularly if you're dealing in a situation where everything's volatile. Like, I don't know what the situation was why the police were called to begin with, but if the police are being called to your house and you're a police officer, but you're having domestic dispute and their firearms improperly stored, I don't know why anyone had the idea of bringing this to a police inquiry. It should have gone straight to criminal charges.
Yeah, he should have been arrested.
Yeah.
And the gun seized.
Yeah, I say the only reason why this went in front of a police court instead of a quote-unquote normal court is because if it's in front of a police court, then it means that the internal investigation does the investigation, whereas if it went in front of a regular criminal court, his buddies would be investigating him.
No, I think at that point, what happens is the next level. So if this guy was municipal, the OPP would be investigating. And if he was OPP, I think the RCMP would be doing the investigation.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing, too, they just downgrade this to, as I said, the unsafe storage, because that's always the fallback charge.
Yeah.
That's all they gave him was unsafe storage.
And I'm sure that the union guy went in there and they probably said, we'll agree to this charge if you let this guy keep his job.
Yeah, which, who knows? Honestly, yeah. If the cops are hiring criminals, then, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it
yeah.
takes all kinds to be a police officer. You know, there's always going to be a bad bunch in there.
Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, we're not arguing that you can get in. We're arguing why you're still there.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand, you know, things change in your life. And just like you start a job and it's your favorite job when you first start, but after a couple of years of doing the same thing over and over again, it's no longer your dream job. It's no longer the right job for you. And maybe being a police officer is no longer the right job for this gentleman.
Yeah. Sounds fair to me.
Yeah.
Sounds fair to me.
All right, Benny, take us on to some greener pastures, please.
So it's not really gun-related, but our prayers and thoughts go out to our friend down in Texas right now, even Tim Krosno. Be safe, my friend.
Yeah, be safe, Tim.
I really wish I read that before I said move us on to greener pastures.
Well, apparently they're doing great cleanup over there. Everyone, like I've been listening to a couple of things, people are saying how money's going where it's supposed to, and the system is the government organizations are running really efficiently, so...
Yeah.
So it is greener pastures for now, hopefully.
Yeah.
And drier pastures.
Yes.
So what's new in guns this week? Well, I guess I got lots of stuff to say because Odell had some really cool stuff up there. The one thing that I saw that really kind of piqued my interest, they have they gear it as a competition ready out of the box. SARZMAZ K12 Sport. Or as they say in the U.S., just SARS, but I guess SARS wouldn't go too well over here. It's a 4.7-inch barrel.
You don't want SARS?
No, no. It was in the States, European Armories, they're importing it under the SARS brand. So the grip says SARS, but the one Odell's bringing in has the full company name on the side.
Okay.
Yeah, just branded the full name. Impressions, competition ready, almost. Trigger needed a little tweaking. The trigger rolled, then bumped before it broke. But it was no worse than a Tanfoglio stock 2 that needs some out-of-the-work box. And actually looks identical to a stainless steel stock 2 would, but a stock 2 goes for around $2,700 from what I could find. These things go for $1,049, and it's a much better match for a new shooby if you can spend $1,049. A couple things I didn't like about it. The frame at the back was sharp, and the back strap only had half checkering, but it had full ambi controls. It had a huge gaping mag. No, sorry, not full ambi controls. Ambi safety. No ambi slide stop. As I said, the big mag well. The checkering I wasn't crazy about on the back strap because it only came up halfway up the frame. So it was kind of slippery in the hand. I would run some skateboard tape up to top of there. But it had the extended mag and everything. And it was accurate. Good fit and finish was good. Not perfect, but it looked pretty well done. And really reasonable price for what you get. Because as I said, they're $1,049 FOC. Lowest I've seen it is $1,029. Highest I've seen it is $1,149. So needs a little work out of the box, but still another nice CZ clone from Turkey. One of the many decent Turkish guns that I've seen up at the Odell place, and it's lots more to come. It's some really nice stuff. Pistols and shotguns and rifles and all kinds of goodies. Optics. Yeah.
It hurts a little bit when you say, oh, it's on the more affordable for the newbie when it's only $1,050.
Well, yeah. What if you're gonna buy your Grandpower, your Ruger GP brand new? What would it cost you now, Mike?
I think it comes about $850.
That's not bad, and then all the work you put into it. So,
yeah, I also like to tinker. I just like to do that kind of stuff too, though.
Right? A 686 is almost a grand.
Yeah,
they're going for $950, usually $100 more.
Yeah,
so
well, that's why I went with the Ruger, because I wanted to save $100.
And how much did you put in trigger adjustments?
Well, realistically, I probably spent like $20 on springs, And then everything else I've spent really was more like just effort, right?
Well, you got an extra hammer for free, didn't you?
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I bought an extra hammer, but that's a side pet project.
So you haven't lightened it yet?
No, I've been trying to wait for someone from work who's good on the mill, because I figure I only really have one shot at this. I can't, you know, drill a hole through my hammer, then send it back to Ruger and say, I messed it up. Can I have another? So I'm waiting for someone from work who has a little bit more milling ability than I do.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how long it goes before I get anxious and then just try it myself.
The itch will come. The itch will come.
Yep.
So the main topic this week, you know, is the 22 long rifle. So I'll get Benny to start us off this week.
So at New Shooter Canada, we love to talk about our 22 rifles, whether it's complaining how they didn't cover them in the PAL course or just in general how they're fun to plink with. George has an accurate pink Browning Buckmark pistol and a Marlin 795. Both are very accurate guns. And there's beer day at the Hatch House today again, so George? George? Nope. Okay. Mike and Sarah have a couple of 10-22s, a Cooey 60, Browning Buckmark pistol, Brinko Woodsman, and they are not really sure what firearms Mario... Oh, we. Sorry.
I'm not either, so... that was technically correct as well.
And we are not really sure what firearms Mary owns now that she has her PAL. She does have a custom-built long-range 308 bolt gun. That sounds like fun to play with.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious what she got. Well, I know Benny's dad has the Ruger American, and it's got a decent scope and a very nice trigger. Or is it Stan's? Does Stan have it now? They tend to share the rifle, and it's pretty accurate gun. And they haven't even adjusted the trigger yet. You guys have never done any... The trigger came that way from the factory, right?
My dad, as much as he's an engineer, I don't know why, but he stopped tinkering with things. I don't know when this happened. Because growing up, it was like, oh, that'll fix it.
Yeah, because they rate it from 3 to 5 pounds. I bet you it's under 3 pounds. It was a really, really nice trigger.
Well, I think it could actually be out of the box. It's supposed to come at 5, and we never adjusted it. So it's just wear and tear, whatever you're feeling now. And we've that gun a lot.
That's way below 5. That's probably at least a 3.5 pound trigger. It was nice. It was a nice trigger. But, you know, I bet you if you relieve the contact point at the end of the barrel, that's contacting the barrel, it would allow it to free float. Because I know that factory is factory bedded, and it's supposed to be a free floating barrel. You can see where the fore end is just rubbing against the barrel. Do what Mike does. Take a Dremel in there and just get it nice and smooth, just so you can slide a dollar bill down the barrel. Because you can probably squeeze some accuracy out of it.
Okay. Well, I'll suggest it to my dad.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what my dad... I actually have a Marlin 795. I sort of share the Ruger with my dad.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that.
And now he has the Remington 597. I have to actually adjust the sights of my Marlin because they are completely off.
Well, you know, that Ruger is probably the nicest polishing and bluing I've ever seen on a Ruger. That's a really well done rifle. That's the nicest one I've seen. And what else? Oh yeah, and you're shooting my 22-45 right now, aren't you? It's not the Donnelly, thanks, listener Thomas, but it's my backup.
Yeah, I don't think I've put one magazine through it, but that's more for when I take people out. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't shot so much recently. I gotta go out again.
Dial it in with that. Right, you got a whole bucket of Remington ammo, right? Just dial it in with that.
Yeah, actually, I went to sale with my dad. Went to put on his scope, and I picked up some. I keep forgetting these things I've done with guns. I picked up some 22 ammo. I picked up some CCI, whatever their normal stuff, not the mini mag stuff, just the regular. I think it's HP. So we're gonna try and put that through the rifles and the guns and see how they deal with those with that ammo. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Thomas, do you have a whole pile of 22s as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got quite a few.
Yeah. And your BL-22 and my Cooey 60 are the only two guns between us that can shoot the short, long, and long rifle cartridge interchangeably.
Yeah, true.
So you have the advantage in capacity with your 20-inch mag tube holding 15-22 long rifle?
Yep.
17-22 long or 22-22 short? Yeah, because mine's not that long. I think I can only fit about 10 22 long rifle.
Yeah, it's funny because you've got a really long 24-inch barrel on that thing too, but it's only got a three-quarter tube.
Yeah, I kind of like the looks of that. My preference is I don't like a tube that goes the whole length of the gun, unless it's a shotgun. But that's a different story.
It depends on the barrel. Actually, when I was looking at the Browning, I thought about getting the youth model because it has a 16.5-inch barrel. But the length of pull would have been way too short for me. But I like the shorter barrel on the mag tube on that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Have you ever tried shooting short or long through your rifle?
Not through any of these rifles. My uncle actually made the mistake of buying some longs once, and he couldn't figure out why they weren't functioning in my Savage 64. But I've never actually tried them.
No, I bought a box of the 22 shorts, like, I don't know what they come in, like 50 or whatever, just because I was curious. So I did that, and then I stepped out from underneath the overhanging cover, and I shot it, and I'm like, oh, that was quiet. So I know I shouldn't do it, but I took my ears off, and I'm like, I wonder how loud this is. So I did that, and I'm like, oh, that's nice and quiet. Like, loud enough that people around you know you shot something, but quiet enough that if you didn't know what a gunshot sounded like, you don't know if I just shot a gun or I just hit something with a hammer.
Yeah, if you're in the open, it's pretty quiet.
Yeah. I just wanted to do that just to see what it was like. And because, like you said, you can load that thing up with 22 shorts in it.
I never have, though. I have never sighted it in for 22 shorts.
Oh, I never said I sighted it in. I just said I shot it.
Oh, okay.
There's a bit of a difference.
Well, the 22 short isn't dead either. It's still used in Olympic competitions. And like you said, it's really quiet. It's great for dispensing pests without disturbing your neighbors. As I said, the 22 long, I've seen it in the shelves, not for a long time. But in the past, shorts and longs were actually cheaper than long rifles. The long rifle was the more expensive ammo. And nowadays, you don't see the long and the shorts are more money because a lot of it's match loads.
Well, you can't even find it. You have to go to your regular Canadian Tire probably doesn't even carry it. You probably have to go to a very, like a shooting-centric store to find it.
I'm guessing somebody talked the Canadian Tire into ordering, I don't know, 5 or 6 bricks of 22 in Wildcat short 10 years ago, okay? That ammo is still there. It keeps going up over the years and back down, but it's still the same ammo. They've never sold it. Because I said, why did you take it out of all the bricks? I remember seeing the kid taking out all the bricks. So we just leave them in the bricks. Oh, no, it looks better this way. And they haven't sold them. Not on purpose.
I don't even know if I still have my 22 shorts or if I just said, I'll just shoot them all. But I remember going and buying them just to be like, I wonder what this is like. And they are a little bit like stubbier, like shorter.
Yeah. But they will, if you fire a lot of them, they will foul your chamber. You will have to clean up the chamber.
Yeah.
Just like running a 38 and a 357.
Yeah. Oh, I have a story about that later. Are the long longer or shorter than a long rifle?
Longer, shorter than a long rifle.
Long or shorter than a long rifle. Okay.
Yeah.
So why'd they come up with the long rifle then?
Well, the long rifle was a combination of a 22 long with a 40 grain bullet and a 22 extra long. I've never even seen the extra long. That came out in 1887 by Jay Stevens. The other thing different about, if you ever take a rip the head off a 22?
Not intentionally.
Not on purpose.
Okay, get a pair of pliers tonight, rip apart a 22. You'll notice the base is a lot different than any modern cartridge that we reload. It has a hollow ball known as a heel portion. And that fits the size of the case. And unlike most cartridges, a 22 bullet is the same diameter as the case. The problem is they get, you know how dirty 22s get? Well, there's lube back in the heel and there's lube going in the case and the case is covered in lube. So a lot of the time it's not just blowback gases that's getting your action dirty. It's the lubricant or wax used to lube the projectile and preventing letting. All 22 long rifles use some type of lubricant in the heel or on the bullet, especially plain lead ones, like the Winchester Wildcats. You pick it up, it's like a wax coating on it. Your hands are all waxy. While the matched RWS cartridges, they're oily. They're slick. They fall out of your hand. I feel like the whole thing's being dipped in oil. And then some of them have them copper washed. So with the advancements in bullet technology and lighter bullet weights, we have some screaming hypervelocity cartridges these days that are excellent for hunting. And the target shooters haven't been left out. All the major manufacturers are marketing match ammo these days. A lot of it's just rebranded ammo from LA or WRS, but there's some good values out there. What I would suggest when the new shooter gets the first rifle, don't be tempted to buy the big blue, green, or that bucket of bulk ammo and just go blast away.
But,
I know, but it's tempting.
It's so cheap.
I know, but you'll never know what the gun can do.
I know, but if you're a new shooter, and I did exactly that. Like, all honesty, that's exactly what I did. And I went to the range, and when I bought my box, I think it was like $20 for like 500 rounds. And I remember Sarah and I went, and we just sat at the bench for like 3 hours and shot 500 rounds and then went home. Like, I mean, if it gets people into it, it's almost like the same idea as telling like a new shooter, don't worry about hitting the bullseye, just hit the paper, right? It's about making it fun before you make it a challenge or a skill set.
The second time you go out, don't go buy a box of the bulk stuff. Have your blasting the first time if you want to have fun. That's fine. Give it a good cleaning after, though. Yeah. The second time out, I want you to buy at least 6 or 7 different brands of various bullet weights and velocities. I know match ammo can be pricey, but try some. And Benny thinks my 10/22 is accurate. He should try it with the WRS. It's phenomenal. Bench the rifle first. Strap a gant down if you can. If you've got a lead sled or something, great. And let's see what your gun can really do. Keep the gun steady. Really, really take your time. No time limit. Just relax, breathe deep normally, and be aware of your respiratory pause. Break the shot during the pause and work the reset. And no dragging weight, as Tom Sticks would say. Really get to know the feel of your trigger and where your finger is on the trigger. Because I think out of all the guns that I own, I enjoy shooting my 22s the most. Like my 10/22, it's phenomenal. 100 yards, you know, those little tiny spinners, the resettable targets.
Oh, yeah.
All day long, I can hit those at 100 yards. All day. and the rifle, half-inch group at 100 yards with the RWS ammo.
Yeah.
Pretty good for 22. And my old club, I take the same spinners and I set them up in the bunker because we could actually shoot metal in the bunker there. And with my compensated 22 with the red dot, we'd have friendly competitions. You know, people would use my gun, and nothing quite like the ping, ping, ping of shooting steel with match ammo and seldom missing your shot. Because if you know what your gun can really do, if you miss a shot, it's operator error, not the gun. So that's why I like to find out what the gun shoots the best, because then I know it's me, it's not the gun.
Yeah.
You got some gun.
I generally figure that most guns shoot so accurate, like more accurate than the shooter is. So pretty much if you miss 99% of the time, it's you, not the gun anyways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
very true.
Until
you get to like a certain skill level.
It's funny. I've seen some people right out of the gate that are incredibly talented. But yeah, on the norm, it's a big learning curve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'd say for most people, it's more important to focus on what you're doing and less important to be a tinkerer and worry about what the gun's doing.
A lot of people aren't happy with the gun right out of the gate. They blame the gun, they blame the trigger, and it's not, it's them.
Yeah.
It's just the basic skill sets and the fundamentals, like once you know your proper grip, proper trigger press, and you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and having some things like a lighter trigger or a better trigger in general can make it easier to do those things. Like there's a little bit more, I'll say, forgiveness to them in a sense.
Well, that's why it's good to, as I said, get out there and bench it to see what the gun can really do on its own.
Yeah.
Because yeah,
when I first got my Jericho was, wow, this gun sights must be off because it's shooting to the left. I mean, right. So.
Yeah.
Yep,
I've had that thought too. And then I bench it and then I realize, nope, I just suck.
Yep. Yep. That's basically it. Yeah. You see where the gun's hitting, and then you see where you are hitting. And that gives you the ability to diagnose what your problem is. You could be dragging weight, you could be pulling the trigger left, down. A lot of people pull their shots just before they break the trigger. They're scared. They blink, and they pull the muscle down every time.
Oh, yeah.
Depending where their finger's going in, they could be pulling it left, pulling it up, pulling it right.
Yep. Which is a good time when 22s are good for trying to train yourself out of that flinch, because that 22 has virtually no recoil. It's much quieter. It won't, I'll say, spook you as much when it goes off compared to if you're shooting something big.
Yeah, because developing a flinch is not a good thing.
No. What about 22 Magnum? I know you didn't really talk about that at all. Do you have, anyone have any 22 Magnums?
No.
I have one. 22 Magnums, basically, there was two. Original, was it WRF, was the original Winchester 20 mag, and then we're using a second generation WSF. Don't quote me. I'm not sure, but there's two different 22 mags. Winchester does reissue anniversary ammo, so the older rifles can still get ammo. Basically, it's extended 22, but it's a full metal jacket.
Okay, so what, besides, I'm assuming, a price jump in there and a little bit more velocity.
And you know, I've never ripped one apart, so I don't know if it has a heel bullet.
No.
I don't remember.
I'm just curious if it's a huge jump or if it's just another
it's
small
a substantial,
jump.
It's a substantial jump in velocity and terminal energy.
Oh, yeah?
Especially for hunting. 22 Magnum, it's a good, up to Coyote, it's a good hard-hitting round.
For how far would you say hitting a Coyote?
I wouldn't go much past 100 yards.
100 yards, okay.
I'm saying it would probably double your hunting distance with a 22 long rifle.
Okay.
And they've got some really nice ballistic tick ammo, so I'm sure it can push it a little bit further, depending what you're shooting at.
Yeah, so it's also, I'd say, a little bit more purpose-built than the 22 long rifle.
The ammo is just as expensive as center fire. You're looking at the 22 Magnum loads or the 17.8 HMR loads, it's the same price as going and buying a box of 9mm
for
50 rounds.
Yeah, you're saying it's the same price compared to a center fire.
But you can't reload it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was fun. We used to take, John and I both had 17 HMRs. But you go up there, and this was like a couple of years ago, and we'd be spending, you know, two boxes, 100 rounds, that was $40. Whereas the 22, I could have shot in probably 500.
Okay.
It's a nice little hunting round.
Yeah.
And it's got a faster twist rate, I believe. Is it faster twist than the 22 long rifle?
Okay.
So that's why a lot of times if you have, some of these revolvers, they'll shoot 22 long rifle and 22 Magnum. And the barrel is usually set up for the 22 long rifle twist rate. So the Magnums don't usually do too well. Close range, it doesn't matter. But for any distance, it won't stabilize properly.
Yeah. So since we're also on rimfire conversation, 17 HMRs, have you ever shot one, Benny?
No. When we were first looking at buying our first rifle, my dad and I, we were actually looking at sale, and the guy pulled out the ammo to show us what they were shooting, and he like just said, okay, here's 17 HMR, which is like really accurate, really far, and here's 22 Magnum, which is like 22 long rifle on you know, heroin or something, and then, you know, show us the 22 long rifle, and it was just like, yeah, 22 long rifle, that's what we're gonna shoot.
What about you, Thomas?
I had a 17 HMR. I won it, actually.
Oh, yeah?
And one of these National Wild Turkey Federation, there was a draw of 12 people, and you got, it's elimination, and I got down to the very last one, and I won a Savage Macko, which is the Savage Bolt action, but had this huge, heavy, heavy laminate stock that had like all shark fin inlays, and you couldn't even put a trigger lock on the gun, because the trigger had to be about 3 or 4 inches wide, all carved wood. It was really, really pretty and fancy, but it was totally impractical for any usage because it was too heavy. I think it had to weigh at least 12 pounds.
Jeez.
For 22. The stock was massive on it.
Yeah.
By the time I put optics on it, it was almost 12 pounds, I bet. So I sold it.
Yeah. How far do you think you could take a Coyote with a 17 HMR?
That's a small projectile.
But isn't it going like screaming fast compared to...
It's really fast. It's just the energy. Safely, maybe 150 yards.
Okay, so you might even be able to reach out a little further with that than than a 22 Magnum. Okay.
It's screaming. It just doesn't have the weight of the 22 Magnum.
Yeah.
It disintegrates instantly.
Oh, yeah?
So you better make your shot good.
Yeah.
If you don't have the energy. I like the 17. It was a nice shooting round. And the rifle, it was this, the Savage Macko, it had a nice trigger, it had the Yaku trigger on it and everything. So it was comfortable to shoot benched, but I'd rather take my 10-22 because I can get the same accuracy.
Oh yeah, I don't know. There's something about the 17 HMR that just seemed like it's, I don't know, the forbidden fruit almost. I don't know. Or just the exotic version of the 22 long rifle. So.
Oh, they move. They absolutely move. You don't want to be hitting steel. You see when they hit steel, they'll actually put a little dent in steel. They're going so fast.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Those spinners, by the way, they're not rated for 17 HMR if you buy some of those 22 spinners. Just to let you know.
So you had to bring them. Even though it's smaller, it's actually not rated.
it was pivoting. You could actually see the bullet indentation of the little nipple from the polymer tip in it. And it bent, all the little plates started to curl. So when I came home, I had to take a hammer down and flatten out all the plates.
I guess that's the benefit of shooting a 22 caliber spinner. You can just take a hammer and bend it back. Not like AR 500. You can't just take that home with a hammer and knock it out.
And this wasn't at my current club. This was at my old club.
So anyone listening, don't get Thomas in trouble.
Well, no, the spinners are fine if they're in the bunker, and I'm using the target ammo, so it's just plated. So there's no full metal jackets or anything, so everything just stays in the bunker.
Yeah.
But it's 100 yards away. I don't have the option of having something at 25 yards like I used to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had 25 yard and 50 yard bunkers at my old club.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was nice. Nice for shooting steel. Our bunker is down range, and you can't use it unless you're in a sanctioned match, so.
Yeah.
But you can shoot from the rifle bench into the bunker, so.
Yeah. So we didn't really talk much about 22 pistols. Benny, do you have any?
Just the backup Donnelly.
The backup Donnelly.
Yeah.
Have you gotten out to shoot it yet?
Not properly. Just the one. I've just put one magazine through it. It shoots nice. Can't complain. I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing done in that is I put a Vox Corsion sear in that, so it actually made the trigger pull a lot better. I've got, what else do I got? I got a Walther P22. Absolutely hate it. Piece of crap. I've got a Beretta Inos Deluxe, which is a 6-inch Inox, or Neos, yeah, the Inox Neos pistol. I inherited it from Terriots.
How do you like that?
I don't.
That almost was my first pistol.
I don't like it. I don't like the trigger. It's striker fired.
But it looks like a space gun.
The grip is very narrow, very thin, and it fits Terry beautifully. It does not fit me.
Yeah.
With an optic on it, it's okay. She can shoot half decent groups with it. There's actually a recall on it still.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a recall on it a couple of years ago. I got a letter from Williams Arms and from Stoger. I just haven't sent it in.
No.
So the trigger could accidentally fire. Not that trigger. That trigger's, it's a heavy trigger. I think it's something with the safety. So, and you know, I don't use my safety unless it's actually in my holster. I don't use the safety.
Yeah. And how often do you holster a 22?
Once. My actually, my K22 Xtrim. It will, and it wasn't loaded. I holstered it in the house. I'd love to do a steel challenge with that gun because I've got the holster, my holster fits. I just have to tighten the mag holders a little bit. It's accurate.
I want to say if you do steel challenge with a 22, you de facto start at low ready.
Yeah,
I think so.
Like, it doesn't matter whether you're, I'll say, an adult. Like, some sports, if you're shooting a 22, they assume that you're, you know, a young child who's just getting into it, so they just start low ready. But I think in steel challenge, it's all low ready.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was a holster involved, because not a lot of companies make holster for 22s. Unless you get the whole, like, general holsters where you can adapt them to a lot of different rounds. But Kydex?
I feel like nowadays you're getting custom holsters anyway, so it's, you know, you're going to be paying for the custom holster anyways.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing I like, is that my, it's the same dimension as the Excalibur. So I've got an Excalibur holster from RH Tactical, and it fits beautifully.
And I know, like, there's a 22 conversion kit for your Glock, there's a 22 version of the P226, so I mean, there are 22 versions of full-size duty guns, so if you want to practice with them, I believe they mostly fit your holster as well, so you can practice everything from drawing.
Yeah, basically. You can get 22 uppers for your AR. It doesn't, they say, makes a great training simulation. That's why you've got the M&P Sport 22. It doesn't. You know, your controls are the same, but it doesn't have the same energy and the same noise, the same everything else, but it's cheap practice.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think where else I got it in the safe. I have an old Crossman single-shot CO2 pistol. I bet you I got this thing in 71, 72. It looks like a German Luger. Single-shot, 22 caliber pellets. At 10 yards, it knocks the X-ring all day. It is incredibly accurate. I think I paid $50 for this air gun, and I think I paid $20 for the holster. And apparently online, that gun and the holster are going for like $300 or $400 nowadays. They're very collectible.
Oh, wow.
Worth a lot of money. Let's see what else. I got a Smith & Wesson 22A, the Tallow Edition 22A.
Oh, yeah.
So it's got the big fancy grips on it, and it's all black trimmed and muzzle's recessed, and it's got a metal trigger. It still shoots like a 22A. It's got a rolling, nasty kind of trigger to it, but it's a nice little gun.
Yeah. I know when the day comes when I win the lottery, I'll probably buy a 22 revolver. I've just always heard that they're great for teaching new people for shooting, just because there's no safeties. Like, most revolvers are pretty straightforward, and, you know, if they struggle with a double-action trigger, you can manually cock the hammer and give them a single action.
Yeah, if you're ever going to buy a 22 revolver, save your money. Don't buy anything but a Smith & Wesson 22 revolver. Is it the K-17? I have never, ever... They come in a 10-shot now, too. Our club had, was it the 617? Yeah. The old blue one. It was ancient. It was incredibly accurate. It had a gorgeous trigger. A friend of mine just got one from Smith & Wesson a couple years ago. 10-shot. And I fired 10 rounds for this thing, and I turned to him and said, "So, who did the trigger work?" He said, "Nobody. It came from the factory like that." Like, oh my God, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it's $1,000. It's more.
Than the
686.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw the GP 100 makes a 10-shot revolver, and I've actually seen online where you can buy 10-shot 22 long rifle speed loaders for them. So if you want,
how hard those would be to load?
Oh yeah,
to get 10 little notches lined up.
Actually, I don't know, but I mean, think of it this way: if you, I don't know, you're in a unique situation where you have a kid who wants to shoot a revolver, but they can't handle, you know, a 38 special, and you want to introduce them to IPSC or IDPA or something like that.
ICOR.
Yeah, ICOR actually had a 22. It's like a unrecognized division where it's like, hey, if you want to shoot a 22, you can come out and do it, but we're just not going to give you a score.
Oh, well, there's the 327 Federal Magnum.
320. I don't know that.
Yeah, 327 Federal Magnum that came out a few years ago. That was popular.
Oh. But yeah, I don't know. I thought they were cool, and I thought the fact that you can get speed loaders for them was kind of cool. Like, if you ever want to play around with competition, or you have someone young who's interested in competition but doesn't want to go with semi-automatic, there's an option.
Well, there's another trigger for you to fool with then.
Exactly. That's what I need, another project.
I don't think I've got any projects on the go right now besides wanting to get some 44 Magnum loads made up. I'm done. I'm not building anything. I'm not buying anything. I'm just coasting right now.
I got to finish my ARs. I got to get my reloading set up properly.
Well, this weekend is the weekend to get deals for ARs. There's some great prices on Facebook.
Yeah. I was just looking at Durham Outdoors. They have Smith & Wesson
MP4. Look how cheap the Tavor is.
Yeah.
You paid 25?
Yeah, but used? Mine came with... it wasn't used. It was just... suppose it wasn't used. I don't think it was. So 25 with an EOTech. So wasn't a bad deal, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I still came out on top because what's it going for? $2,025 at FOC right now?
It was cheap. Yeah, 23. It was a couple hundred dollars less than what you paid for it.
Right, but then you have to get a Neotech, which is going to cost you about $500 or $600.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't pay tax.
That's true. So you got a good deal.
Yeah. So yeah, it's $2,050. They have some other nice deals going on, but their M&P Sport is about $100 more than Durham Outdoors.
Yeah, because what Durham Outdoors asking for it?
$659. Yeah, FOC's asking $700.
Because Williams Arms, I was talking to Gary. He said they were getting them, and they're going to be $675.
Yeah,
he was trying to talk Heather into buying one.
Yeah.
Yep. So, write to the show and tell us all about your favorite rimfire rifle or pistol. We will pick a listener at random to join us on New Shooter Canada as a guest host. Since George is now on his dinghy, no, his sailboat without sails, he just putts around the harbor now. Oh, wait, it's beer with dad, right? Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. But did he not message us and tell us that he has a topic for next week's show?
I believe so. So
so he just come and goes as he please. He sits beer night. It's I'm sailing night.
He's not going to come on and tell us how to sail, is he?
You know what? He just might.
We already have one Canadian podcast that likes to talk about random other subjects. I think we're okay with sticking to guns.
We're lucky because the sailing won't start until at least the spring.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to hear this and he's going to intentionally start just, I don't know, throwing stuff out.
If we're unlucky, he'll go do archery with his kids again.
See, I don't mind the archery talk. It's the airplanes I'm a little bored with. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind the airplanes. My grandfather had an airplane when I was a kid, so I don't mind the airplane or the videos.
Like, my brother's does pilot as a hobby, and my dad was trying to do it. But it just doesn't grab my attention like archery does. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Mike, what's event one this week?
So, if you live in BC, there's a CCFR pub night. So, it's on Friday, September 15th. Starting at $1,900. It's at the Thirsty Duck Pub at 606 12th Street, New Westminster, British Columbia. So come on, come all. The CCFR is hosting a pub night in New Westminster, BC to kick off the fall season, as well as share stories of hunting and shooting. Everyone is welcome to this event, whether you are a member or not. Come learn about the CCFR or come chat with your local volunteers. There will be raffles throughout the night, and make sure to bring your appetite for food.
What? We didn't get raffles when they had their pub night at the after the sportsman show.
No, we did. Well, no, that was we got Tracy. They're not getting Tracy, so we got lucky.
Nothing against Tracy, but I wouldn't mind a new gun.
I don't know. Tracy gives pretty good hugs. So event three, Select Shooting Supplies, is having their third range day, September 23rd, 10 to 4 o'clock. It's at the Galt Sportsman Club, 6542 Gore Road, Cambridge, Ontario. They won't have Grandpa this year, but Smith & Wesson will be there. CCFR will be there, SIG, apparently the CSSA, and Vortex, Savage Arms, and I can't read that other really teeny small one in the back, Mike. I can't click on it. Damn. And somebody else.
Canadian something. Historical Arms Museum.
Is that what it is? Hang on here. Oh,
yeah. Okay. I've blown the whole thing up. Canadian Historical Arms Museum. There you go.
Okay. And that's September 23rd. And what's next, Mike?
Next is the Florenceville Shooting Sports Club's 2017 annual fundraiser draw. So the ticket sales are very slow, so your odds are good for winning if you already bought a ticket. As of Thursday, when we spoke with Ash, he told us that they have only sold 160 tickets out of the 400 printed. So 240 tickets remain unsold, not looking good for the club. So buy a ticket. Yep. And it's $20 a ticket. And first place is a Tika T3 Sporter and 223 Remington, or $1,500 cash. Second, or I'm assuming this is second, is a Henry 22 long rifle lever action, or $400 cash. And there are also other great prizes like binoculars and Oakley glasses.
I think I might try and do this one then, because how much does a Tika go for on CGN?
15 plus tax.
Oh, okay.
Or yeah, I was going to say, take 15 and there's no hassle, right?
Well, maybe it's worth the couple extra bucks.
Oh yeah, if it was worth $2,000 or something like that.
I'll have to speak to the wife.
You'd have no problem selling it if you got it.
Yeah. Women of the Outdoors Range Day, Sunday, October 1st, 2017. Pistol shooting, rifle marksmanship, skeet shooting, and archery. And this is happening at the Silverdale Gun Club. It's being hosted by Amanda Lynn Mahan $60 registration fee, starts at 8 a.m. You can visit, or I don't think it worked, but www.owhantanso.com. Links are in the show notes.
Excellent. And listener email. It looks like, Benny, you got an answer to your question about your crimp, so why don't read this one from Matt from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns.
Sounds like the primer crimp needs to be removed. RCBS makes a cheap primer pocket swaging die. Otherwise, you can use the other tools to cut the crimp away. From Matt Geese, from Geese Gadget Guns.
Yeah, okay. And he had a link for from Brownells where you can find that RCBS primary pockets wager.
Did you send me the same thing but from Cabela's? Is that what you sent me?
You got that in another message. Yes, it was the same one but from Cabela's.
Right, okay.
Yeah. We got a couple Facebook messages, one from Spook, and it said another great podcast, gents.
Thank you, Spook.
Yep, and another message was from Jay Thomas, and he was asking what the stands were made of in the background of the last episode's picture. And they're actually made of what, at least from my understanding, they look like PVC pipes, which I thought was very, very cool idea, because you just buy, you know, the correct connectors, and they make a vertical part with a kind of a triangular base, and then you can just throw a bag of sand on top of that triangular base, and it holds them up. Great. So,
and yeah, I imagine they're two by twos for the support stands to put your targets on.
Yeah, and I imagine it'd also be quite light for moving around as well, as opposed to like the big blocky wood ones where you can only carry like two at a time.
They're great and they're stackable because we made a whole bunch of those for our club action pistol league when I shot at Union.
Oh, really?
They're still actually there, yeah.
Okay.
Brady, he went around, he made all kinds of them with the PVC pipe. Yeah. Pretty ingenious.
Yeah.
And this one's for Benny. It says, this is for Benny on the IVI 556 brass, military brass. It has a crimp in the primer, so you need RCBS primer pocket tool, swiping shoot link below. And
that was the Cabela's link for the Canadians who don't want to order it up from the U.S.
Ah, right. Okay. And you can also use commercial brass with no crimp. Hopefully this will help, from Wayne. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne. Yeah, so the issue with the brass was, and thanks everyone for the responses. I really do appreciate it. And to know that we actually have listeners out there is really nice. The thing is, I messaged X-Metal Targets before I even thought of reloading. To see if they, like, what the process was, like, if I had to swage it. And they seemed to say that I didn't need to swage it. So, I guess swaging is needed?
I would think so. So, have you tried knocking the stuck primer out of those cases at all?
Yeah, no, that...
Carefully?
Yeah, carefully, with goggles and gloves and standing away and...
And making sure MD isn't home so we don't get yelled at?
I was actually very tempted to just take it to the range and see if I can chamber it and fire it around the lights of war without anything in it. But now that I think about it, that might be a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I don't think it will chamber because it won't be able to grab onto the rim if the primer's sticking out.
Or it might set it off, actually. You're right.
Yeah. Well, if
that Tavor bolt moves forward pretty hard.
Yeah.
Is it a free floating firing pin?
I don't think so. I think it is held in place with spring.
Spring loaded? Okay.
Yeah. I've never taken my guns further than like basic field stripping, so.
Yeah. But you got a swager now for giving this a shot.
Oh yeah, and it seemed, and I must say there was some kind of resistance when I was using it on the couple that I had lying around, so I think there is some swaging that needs to be done.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good that it's working.
Yeah.
So please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca or visit our Facebook page or in a comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. And thank you for your feedback. We really like hearing from our listeners. I'm wearing the old man glasses and I can't see diddly with this. See, hoot and diddly. I'm really getting old, Mike. Any iTunes, Mike?
Nope. No new iTunes or Stitcher reviews.
Facebook, Benny?
I'm just updating now, but last time I checked is, 1153, so.
Excellent.
Yep.
We're further than when we started, when we wrote the show notes.
There you go.
Okay. So our closing comment tonight, join the CCFR or the CCSA, get active, get involved. They all rely on volunteers. Shoutouts. Mike?
My shoutout, I forgot to shout out George last week for doing the editing while I was gone. So that was actually a huge help for me, and it helped make sure that the show got out close to on time.
Yeah.
A lot closer than it would have been if I had to edit it. So
thank you, George.
Thank you to George.
Thank you, George.
Benny?
Shout out to MD for putting up with me again and keeping my business going. I had one I was going to shout out someone. Oh, right, Mike. Mike, for popping by. It was really nice having lunch with you. And seeing you in person again, and bringing the swager, which is very appreciated.
No problem. It was great seeing you again, too.
Yeah, and George, you have to come to Toronto more often. And Thomas, for the Donnelly, I'm going to thank you again for that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Much appreciated.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the use of the Tumblr.
Oh, right. Did you hear back from the range yet, or no, not yet?
No. We want to do some night shots.
Well, basically, some
indoor shots, right?
Indoor shots, yeah.
And
with wax instead of real
with
bullets.
Blanks. We want to take shots of the muzzle brakes, but we can't do it out because you can't shoot after sunset in the outdoor range.
Yeah.
We'd be making a lot of noise, a lot of flash. So I asked permission if we could do it like after 10 or 11, after the range is, everybody's gone. And we'll have to actually, because the lights control the flags for the range. So we'd have to actually go get the red and green flags from the outdoor range and use them on the indoor clubhouse because no lights, there's no signals.
So you're
I asked.
Your indoor range is not 24/7 then?
It is, but if we're going to be filming, we can't be using, when we do the fans work, but the light, when you turn on the lights, it activates the red and green light.
Okay.
So when you turn the lights off, you lose your system, your light system, so you have to get the flags back up.
Okay, I understand what you're saying now.
Yeah, and I just said we'll just put signage up, you know, recording for 15 minutes or whatever, and just, so we don't.
Yeah.
But I need permission to do it, right?
Yeah.
You can't shoot center fire indoors. That's the rule.
Center fire rifle.
Center fire rifle. Well, I can't shoot my center fire carbines indoors. I can shoot my pistols, but no pistol carbines indoor. Only rim fire.
Well, indoors. No, when you say center fire, it makes me think like not even a 9mm.
Well, long gun, no.
Yeah.
No. Only pistols. No pistol caliber carbines.
You're allowed pistols, center fire pistols in there.
Pistol only, no center fire carbines. I can't shoot my high point in there, and I can't shoot my lever gun in there. I have to use the outdoor range.
What if it's an AR pistol?
It's going to put holes to the backstop, and I'll lose my membership pretty quickly. So no.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting that. I just
no. We have a no full metal jacket rule. For some reason, you can use Windclean, which is a full metal jacket, which is fine. But yeah, I can't bring any factory full metal indoors.
Yeah.
You know, and we've had issues. So we have security cameras now. So
yeah, that's the way things go.
Actually, most of the damage is done by guests, not from the actual members. So
yeah. Hey. I don't think I shot anything I wasn't supposed to.
Well, like you don't take somebody who's never fired a gun before, in my opinion, and put him on a 1911 or 9mm first.
Yeah.
You put him on a 22 indoors.
Yeah.
And even 22s indoors, they're still going to be shooting the baffles and the floor and everything else. So
yeah.
You might as well mitigate it to a small round. So that's why you have that rule. We don't have a lot of rules, but you got to follow them.
Yeah. So anyway, Thomas, who are your shout outs for?
This week, of course, Phil and Pam O'Dell and the crew. Nice meeting you, Kayla. David, thank you very much. And I really liked having Sarah on last week's show.
Yeah, I liked having her on too.
If she's not opposed to it, I would like having Sarah on a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. We'll talk later.
It's time. It's timing, right? Because you get the little one. Okay, so until next time, keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
And take a kid shooting. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Okay, Thomas, you want to start the show? We could have just cut him out halfway through, just hung him up.
Like, we could just cut out this whole part and start over again.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Okay, so Benny.
Yeah. If you guys want to contact us, so write to the show and tell us all about your favorite rifles and pistols. Well, we're really bad with the segues in this show, so. Thomas?
you're kind of the lead host.
Oh, yeah. So I got to say this, right? Please send any feedback, questions, or comments.
Sorry, do you want to try that again? You want to send any what?
Hang on.
Get off Facebook.
Okay, I'm off. Benny?
It's not about... No, it's Mike's turn.
Yeah, it's Mike's turn, and he forgot what he says. Thomas messed me up there, because when he said, keep your barrels downrange and smoking, and I was thinking in my head, oh, take your kids shooting, and I'm like, wait a second, no, it's my turn, and that's not what I say.